Welcome to the debate. You know, when we talk about a lightning rod, we usually praise its utility.
Sure, it keeps the house from burning down.
Exactly. It stands tall, takes the strike, and saves everyone else. But we rarely think about what all that voltage actually does to the metal itself, strike after strike.
It degrades it.
It ruins it, right. So today we are looking at the Callaghan family and Banshees of Ireland and their ancient duty to sing the Cawainiath, the traditional mourning song.
Right. And the central question before us is whether this duty is an oppressive curse of generational trauma or, you know, a vital mechanism for communal survival.
I argue that the Cawainiath is a necessary, empowering confrontation with grief. Without the rod, the whole structure just turns to ash. And from my perspective, this tradition operates exactly like a destructive lightning rod. It is a cruel, destructive chain placed on the Callaghan women. I mean, the text presents a really harrowing look at inherited trauma.
It is a heavy burden. I will give you that.
It is beyond heavy. These women are forced to endlessly process the entire village's pain. They internalize everyone else's sorrow. We see the ultimate cost of this in the history of the original Banshee, Cleona, who literally starves to death while weeping for others during a famine.
Right, but we have to look at what they are preventing. That crushing weight is the only thing standing between the village and total annihilation. The mourning tradition isn't just some shackle.
It sure acts like one for them.
Well, it is a literal and magical shield protecting the community from the true horror of unprocessed death. Let us look at the actual mechanics of this world for a second. When the singing stops, the Dullahan, that headless rider, crosses over from the realm of the dead.
Yeah, to harvest souls without mercy.
Exactly. So the Cawainiad isn't just noise. It is a magical tether. When these women sing, they are physically holding the door closed between the living and the dead.
They are holding the door, sure. But they are still the lightning rods taking the hit. They protect the village, but they are burned to ashes in the process. Look at how Nora's grandmother, Nuala, views her own legacy in Chapter 2.
Oh, with the silver medallion?
Yes.
When she points to it, she explicitly calls it, quote, a chain, and it holds you, and one day it will pull you up there exactly as it pulled every woman of my blood before you. The tradition demands that these women completely sacrifice their own psychological survival.
I hear you, but we have to be really careful with Nuala's interpretation there.
Why? She lived it.
She did, but her worldview is deeply warped by her own trauma, specifically her refusal to process her daughter's death. She shut the door on her grief and anger. But if we look at Fintan's perspective in Chapter 5, he reveals the true danger of that silence.
You mean when he talks to Nora at the crossing?
Yes, exactly. He tells Nora, quote, "The song is a hand held out at the crossing. When your grandmother threw the song away, she cut off the hand. She left the door ajar."
Right, but that still places all the burden on Nuala.
Because by stopping the song, Nuala didn't just suppress her grief. She abandoned her post. The Dullahan only rides because the mourning stopped. So the trauma didn't come from the song itself. The trauma came from the silence.
I mean, you might hear Nuala later in Chapter 9 call this tradition a wound opened wide so the pain can find its way out. And you might think she has finally found peace with her role.
She does find a kind of peace, though.
Maybe. It does provide emotional catharsis for the village. But we have to ask ourselves a fundamental question here. Does the utility of keeping a monster at bay excuse placing this crushing weight on Nuala, a 15-year-old girl?
Well, she is, you know, the next in line.
But she is thrust into this terrifying responsibility before she has even had a chance to live her own life. The fact that the song works doesn't make it any less of a curse for the person forced to sing it.
Except Nuala actually finds her own voice precisely by accepting that weight. It is not just an imposition of pain. It becomes a really profound act of love and agency.
Agency? She was born into it.
Right, but she chooses how to use it. By singing the Cawainiath, she actively weaves her friend Maeve's name into the mourning. She rescues her from the Reaper. Nora transforms from a victim of circumstance into an active guardian.
I suppose she does take control of the narrative there.
She realizes that avoiding grief doesn't make it disappear, it just makes it dangerous. Facing it, actually singing it, is what gives her power.
which leaves us with a fascinating, totally unresolved tension between the crushing weight of inherited trauma and the absolute necessity of emotional catharsis.
Definitely. We clearly have continued disagreement on whether the text ultimately condemns or validates this really heavy legacy.
And that ambiguity is exactly why the material warrants such deep exploration. We strongly encourage our listeners to read the full book to experience Nora's climactic choice at Dunmore.
Oh, for sure. We have barely scratched the surface of the lore, and we certainly aren't going to spoil the ending here.
Absolutely not. We leave the final interpretation of the Banshee's legacy to the listener. Are these women simply lightning rods, condemned to bear the burning strikes of the past? Or does embracing the storm give them the power to light the dark?